I'm not sure how it happened, but here we are ready to start the final hour of this week's AgriTalks. But we are not going to coast into the end. No way. We're bringing the goods, including some details of the USDA Cattle on Feed report. And Matt, did I mention that Matt's going to be here?
Live from the cavalcade of market insight via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we will talk with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. And in the final segment, I will update you the Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
He's setting the bar a little high there for us. I mean, it's Matt Bennett, a cavalcade of...
Cavalcade.
Wow. That's that's asking for a lot from us today.
Well, and really, you know, I'll be honest. Sometimes I just say words because I don't get to say them very often. It's difficult to work a cavalcade into conversation, you know, especially when I'm just sitting here with the dogs.
You know, you're an artist. But, so you are an artist in the way that you make that happen from time to time, Davis. It is not overlooked here. It is greatly appreciated, the efforts that you make there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your appreciation. That's really great. It's
you know
a cavalcade
me. I'm just here
of gratitude. Gratitudinal cavalcade.
Dow's off about 140 points here heading into the final hour of trade. So a little bit of pressure there. I think that's got something to do with the conflicts or the, I'll call them conflicts between the U.S. and China. Just some uncertainty over what it means for economic growth potential here in the States. We got the cattle on feed report, and market did with as uncertain as the times are for the cattle industry, the market did a really nice job. This is according to a Reuters survey. The average trade guess on the total number of cattle on feed on July 1 was steady with year ago, 100%. We got 100% from USDA. Placed in June, the average trade guess was up 3.8%. We got a 2% increase. Marketed in June, trade was looking for a 1% increase from a year ago. We got a 1% increase. And those are the rounded numbers. I haven't dug down to get it, you know, exactly, but those are the headline numbers. Total number of cattle on feed on July 1, 100% of year ago. Placed in June, up 2%. And marketed in June, up 1% from a year ago. So... Okay. Market did a nice job of anticipating it. Now, real quick, let's get some of the headlines from the cattle inventory report. This is the report that comes twice a year. Let's see. All cattle and calves in the United States on July 1, 2020 totaled 103 million head, slightly above the 103 million head on July 1, 2019. So basically unchanged. All cows and heifers that have calved, 41.4 million, slightly below the 41.6 million. A year ago, beef cows, 32.1 million head, down 1% from year ago. Milk cows, 1% down from year ago. Milk cows, 9.35 million head, up 1% from last year. All heifers, 500 pounds and over on July 1, 16.5 million head, up 1% from year ago. Steers, 500 pounds and over on July 1, 15 million head, up 2% from a year ago. Bulls, 2.1 million head, unchanged. Calves under 500 pounds, this is important, 28 million head. Calves under 500 pounds, 28 million head, down slightly from a year ago. Cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the United States for all feedlots totaled 13.6 million head on July 1, 2020, unchanged from a year ago. So there you go. Not a lot of movement in the size of the herd right now, but that beef cow herd being off 1%, that's pointing us in a new direction. That's pointing us in a new direction. And with the drought that we're looking at in some of cow-calf country, we got to be aware of that. Okay, buddy, what was moving prices around?
Well, Chip, wheat futures closed off session highs, but did hold on to solid gains heading into the weekend. Short covering gets much of the credit for the late week push to the upside, although traders continue to point to pressure on the U.S. dollar as a source of support for U.S. wheat prices. The greenback did make a new low for the year today, Chip. Export sales have topped trade expectations the past 2 weeks, and reports of dry conditions in Russia's spring wheat areas have importers turning to the U.S. for supplies. In the week ahead, traders say a shot of export demand from China would help to build on today's upside price momentum. September hard red winter wheat was 8 1/4 cents higher, 449.5. September soft red jumped a dime, 539.5. September spring wheat was up 5 1/4 to close at 515 1/4, Chip.
All right, and on the week, September SRW futures up 4 3/4 cents. Get this, September hard red futures up 0.75 cents.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it. And spring wheat futures September contract up 4 cents.
Well, despite some dry conditions in the western half of Iowa, Indiana, and Ohio, traders continue to call growing conditions mostly beneficial for the U.S. corn crop. The forecast calls for a hot weekend in the Midwest, but more seasonal temperatures and chances for scattered rains have slipped into the forecast for next week. Chinese feed mills have been aggressive buyers of domestic and U.S. supplies for the past few weeks, but growing political tensions between the U.S. and China this week seem to put a big question mark over the potential for additional sales in the weeks ahead. September corn futures were 1 3/4 cents lower at 3.26 1/4. December corn slipped a half penny, 3.35. March corn closed at 3.46. That's up a half cent on the day, Chip.
All right. And on the week, September corn off 6 1/4 cents and December corn off 4 3/4 cents.
USDA today made a daily export sales announcement for the ninth consecutive morning. This time it was for 252,000 metric tons of soybeans to an unknown destination. That capped price strength in the bean market today was the Midwest weather forecast for next week. The bean crop will be entering what is considered the most important month of the growing season at the end of next week, and most traders consider this year's growing season to be relatively risk-free for the bean crop to this point. In the week ahead, the weather forecast will undoubtedly be watched closely, but traders are also now conditioned to expect a near daily dose of export demand as well. August bean futures 1 1/2 cents lower, 9.04 3/4. September beans slipped 2 cents, 8.98 3/4. Novi bean futures closed at 8.99 1/4, down 0.75 cents. Chip, so
you know,
close.
I think today's guest, Matt Bennett, is sparring with some guys out there on Twitter right now, going into don't front run what we're going to be talking about here, guys. Good grief. We're going to talk about some yield potential and everything, and what you just said in the bean comments there about how everybody's saying that the weather out there is generally beneficial for the crops. We'll get Matt's take on that coming up in a little bit here. August beans on the week up 6 3/4 cents. November beans on the week up 4 1/4.
Cotton took it on the chin today. October off 172 at 59.96. Dease cotton dropped 182 points to 60.10. And on the livestock side, cattle were mixed ahead of the monthly cattle on feed and twice yearly cattle inventory reports. August live cattle futures were 47.5 higher, 101.32.5. Dease cattle gained 30 cents, 109.32.5. August feeders up 2.5 cents to 142 1/2. On the snout side, hog futures closed lower but recovered nicely from sharp midday losses. Hog slaughter this week looks like it will be up solidly from last week, and traders are looking for another big Saturday kill. August hogs were 47.5 cents lower at $54 on the nose. December hogs slipped 27.5 to 51.92.5. Chip,
didn't have a bad week for hogs. It was a choppy week, but for the week, August hog futures up $1.20. August live cattle futures were down $1.95, and August feeder cattle futures were down 65 cents. Davis, I'm excited about this. Next week in the AM show, we've got Congressman Austin Scott from Georgia. We've got Senate Ag Chairman Pat Roberts and Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao.
What?
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize the National Corn Growers Association for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Street lights along the highway. I don't know why he did this, but he did. this guy out there on Twitter, at Chief321. He says, on with Chip Flory here in a few. Call in and give us a hard time, if nothing else. Let's throw some big yield estimates around, maybe. If you would like to do that, call in and give Matt Bennett a hard time from agmarket.net. Mm-hmm. Feel free. 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. We can have a little fun with it on a Friday. Let's go ahead and do that. You can also tweet at us. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message when you do it. Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Tell me, how's it look over there in central Illinois?
Things look really good. I'll tell you what, the stuff that we planted in April, we planted, about half of our crop there in early April, whenever we were all worried about, you know, the extremely cold temperatures. We just decided to roll the dice. And so the corn and beans that we planted in that time frame is the best looking stuff we had really all year. But, you know, some of the later stuff that we planted as well caught up to it. Looks really good. The April corn is fully pollinated. I've got all the moisture I'd ever want. And quite frankly, you know, we're going to be looking at some pretty large yields, I think, on both corn and soybeans at this stage of the game.
Okay, so is it a case of backyarditis that you've got? You're just looking at the good stuff, or you got anything, any areas that you're concerned about?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously there's been parts of Iowa that have had some dryness issues, you know, in western Iowa. I know a couple of people that actually work out of an office of ours there in Anthony, Iowa, have said that, you know, that they were dry in that part of the world. But, you know, overall, I think whenever I talk to producers throughout the Corn Belt and I ask them, you know, how's your crops look, a very large percentage of those producers are saying, this could be a record crop for me. I don't want to go on the record, but this could be a record crop for me. And so I've got to think that, you know, we could have a pretty salty yield posted there in August, I guess, in my opinion.
Well, you know, 178.5, isn't that the trend line number that's plugged into the balance sheet right now, 178.5?
Yes.
Let's see. I'm getting to it. Yeah, 178.5. That's already got plenty of salt on it, I think. How much more can you – tack on that? I don't know.
I'll tell you what, Chip, how about I go over 178.5, you take the under, and you tell me what we're going to bet on it.
No, I wouldn't be willing to do that quite yet.
Well, my gut feeling, go ahead.
You know this not just because of crop tour, but we've talked about this when we were out on crop tour together before. That dryland yield in Nebraska really plays a big role in determining what the overall yield in that state is going to be. Now, last year is pretty doggone good. Can this year's be as good as it was a year ago?
This is fantastic. So, we've got the Eastern Belt versus the Western Belt with a dressed half a steer on the line. I wrote it down. That's the bet, a half a steer.
There we go.
Eastern Belt versus Western Belt.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, right. So I don't know if that Nebraska dryland's going to be able to live up to it. That's a big question mark, and plus that Western Iowa crop.
Right. No doubt that you're going to get nicked a little bit there. You know, I think whenever you had such a good spring planting window, you get the crop off to a good start, and I think that a lot of these crops can wait a little bit on rain. One thing I'll point out is that, you know, some of these temperatures have underperformed, you know, where we were forecasted to be exceedingly hot, you know, 95 degrees, and you come in here and you're 86 degrees. Corn loves 85, 86 degrees, but, you know, I got to think that they're still hanging on to the chance to have an awfully good crop. You catch a rain in here and things can change pretty quickly, but I feel pretty confident at this stage of the game that the USDA will print above a 180 in August. I'm not saying that's going to be the end number. I just feel pretty confident that when they send the surveys out, based upon the producers that we've talked to, that the producers are going to be pretty high on their crop, and they're going to be talking a pretty large yield there, at least to start out with.
Right. Yeah, Dwayne Bussey thinks he's being funny, Matt. He thinks we should bet a steak dinner in 2032 when we can eat out again.
Yeah, that might.
The studio audience appreciated that.
Yeah, I guess they did. But the steak dinner sounds good, but half a calf sounds, dressed calf sounds better, though.
Prime steer. Well, and that is what I wrote down. I mean, so it's on now.
It's once it's written down, it's a deal.
Yeah.
So tell me about Indiana and Ohio over there your way.
Hey, I'll tell you what. There's producers that are telling me in Ohio that they certainly have, you know, some dry spots here and there. If you look on the drought monitor, you know, there's a couple spots that pop up. But the guys in Indiana and Ohio that I'm talking to are telling me almost across the board that they feel pretty confident they're going to have a really good corn crop. Of course, you know, in some of these areas, the bean crop didn't go in quite as early as maybe what it did for some of us. So, you know, I mean, we've still got 3 weeks of bean weather to monitor. But bottom line, for me, when you go into the month of August, and I know you and I've talked about this on crop tour before, when you're on crop tour and you come out of a field with mud on your boots, that tells me the bean crop's going to be pretty good, right? I think when you go into August with a full soil moisture profile, boy, you know, you've got a lot of the battle won already. Yeah, you probably need another rain to really finish out, but I feel pretty confident that the bean yield in August, you know, is probably going to be a 50 plus. Now, I don't know that you'll get exceedingly above that, you know, being early in August that we're going to be getting the number, but I think they'll print a 50 there in August as well.
Okay, we got you with a 180 plus print for corn yield in August. At the 178.5 in the July S&D, it gave us an ending stocks estimate of 2.648 billion bushels. If we print a 180 and increase your supply, what are you looking at on the ending stocks?
Well, if you print a 180, you know, just using their numbers, you know, we're looking with their harvested acres, we're looking at like a 2772. You know, I wonder if we're gonna keep demand the same. I think that you could probably inch that up just a little bit, maybe even the 2.8 or better. But you know, what's gonna happen with exports? I mean, it's obviously with corn exports, you know, that were posted this week that we got last week. You know, it's over 2.5 million tons of corn. You get a couple more weeks like that, you start to change the conversation just a little bit. So I think there's a lot of whispers that China is still out there really looking hard for corn. Every government auction they have, they sell every bit of corn, and their interior Chinese corn prices are sky high. So, heck, they could buy U.S. corn and sell it in China and make money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, on one hand, Matt, we sit here and we talk about stuff like this and their obvious feed demand. I mean, Reuters had that report early this week that they were talking about auctioning off some rice to the feed mills, auctioning off some wheat to the feed mills. You don't do that in a country where you've got 1.3 billion people, where you can turn wheat and rice into food for people. You don't run that stuff through an animal before you turn it into food. You leave it as it is. And they're talking about doing, they obviously are using way more feed than what anybody thought that they were going to be using right now.
I think they're using way more feed. And then as well, I think that their indications on what their stocks levels were, especially for corn, were potentially exaggerated. You know, God forbid I say that they would do such a thing. But I've got to think that their situation is significantly tighter than what they're letting on. And you're right, they're feeding like it's going out of style. And so I think that their, their resumption in building that pork herd up is just been huge. You know, I think that they're probably doing so. We all know that they can do things quicker than what we can do over here due to lack of regulations. If they decide they want to have 100,000 people build a few hog buildings, they're going to have them do it 24 hours a day until it gets done. You know, and obviously their only stopping point's just getting the hogs. But, you know, bottom line for me is they're using a ton of feed, and they've been using way more corn than what they've been producing the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And I've got to think that they're going to still be in here buying more corn.
You know, this is just such a weird time for me, Matt. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around what is going on. But it's like if you go back to the 1980s, what we've got going on with China right now would have been like Ronald Reagan saying to Gorbachev, you know what? Hey, keep buying our corn. Keep buying our wheat. Keep buying. Oh, and by the way, tear down the wall.
Right. It's how do you
can't mesh these two things in my head. We're going to talk about this a little bit more when we come back, because trying to figure out exactly how we're going to manage phase one, what apparently is huge Chinese demand for feed grains and soy, against the political tensions that we've got going with that country. We're talking with Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. China retaliates against U.S. by closing American consulate. Trump says China trade deal means less to me now, and said the U.S. had to turn the economy off because of what China did. Rising odds China will hit the TRQs for corn and wheat. Argentine dryness causing problems for newly planted wheat. French wheat crop ratings improve a bit as harvest advances. There's a tropical storm developing in the Gulf. Tropical Storm Hannah is expected to make landfall along the central Texas coast on Saturday. China said it will have a COVID-19 vaccine ready for this year. And Davis, I'm putting you first in line to go ahead and take that first vaccine shot from China. Meatpackers sue OSHA. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer by going to cherryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
We're going to have to go to the tape on this. I know we're going to have to go to the tape on this because, you know what? I think you may be responsible for the half of beef, not me.
I'm just the handsome newsman. That's you. I'm an impartial observer. I'm the recorder.
Is that what you are? Yeah, yes. I don't recall me saying that I would even take the bet, that I would even go, that I would take the under on the 178.5.
Give me till Monday and I'll have the audio manufactured. I mean, ready for you.
right. Exactly. Exactly. I get it. Oh, boy. I almost went back to the vaccine on that. I'm not going to do it. All right. Let's recap how the markets did today.
Chip, September hard red winter wheat, 8 1/4 cents higher at 449.5. September soft red jumped a dime to 539.5. September corn futures were 1 3/4 cents lower, 326.25. These corn off a half penny, 335. August soybean futures 1 1/2 cents lower at 904 3/4. November bean futures closed at 899.25, down 0.75 cents today. October cotton 172 points lower, 59.96. August live cattle futures were 47.5 cents higher, 101.32.5. August feeders up 2.5 cents, 142.25. And August lean hogs 47.5 cents lower at $54 on the snout. There's your quick market recap. Now back to you. Let's get back to Matt for some more needling.
Yes. Very good. Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. You know, Matt, I don't know if I want, I'm trying to come up with new nicknames for the handsome newsman here, because if he's going to be right at the front of the line to take that first shot of a Chinese developed vaccine here in the U.S. Are we going with Davis guinea pig Michelson, Davis canary? I kind of like the canary. How about lab rat? Let's go with lab rat.
My only problem with trying to pick on him is he's trying to help me on this half a beef thing, so I don't know if I want to even weigh in on this deal. So.
Got your back, buddy. I'm trying to get the other half as a as a facilitator's fee here. That's my angle.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm paying bonuses of a full beef for each show that you jokers are on, this could be the last time we've got you.
It sounds delicious.
This relationship with China, Matt, how do you wrap your head? What is it? If you try to make sense of it, how do you do it?
It's impossible to make sense. I mean, you know as well as I do, Chip, in the past we've seen so many different times, you know, that they've canceled a shipment. And my dad always used to tell me, if they cancel a shipment, just be ready because they're going to be buying it again cheaper here in about 3 or 4 days, you know. And so, yeah, obviously we got to pay attention to the saber rattling. We're getting into it with them. We're telling them to get out of consulate in 72 hours. they retaliate by telling us we've got to get out of one of ours. You know, bottom line is, though, the Chinese are phenomenal marketers, and they are crude marketers, and they are going to buy wherever it's cheapest and wherever they can get a readily available, safe supply. And so with our beans being cheaper on the world market right now, obviously they're buying them up like it's going out of style. You look and see what's going on in Brazil. They don't really have a whole lot of beans left to put on the market anymore anyway. And then you look at what's going on with the dollar. It's doing nothing but helping our cause as far as our exports are concerned. So, you know, I got to think that the Chinese, they can be madder than you know what at us. They're still going to buy off of us if it's the best deal that they can get, though.
You know, and I think that, boy, that's a good point, because even when you go back to when our relations were good, okay, when we were feeling good about signing phase one, China was very quick to point out, yeah, we've got this agreement, but we will make the purchases when it makes financial sense for us to buy U.S. product. Not until then. Not until then. So if we go the other way and our relations start to break down, why wouldn't we say that if it makes financial sense for them to purchase U.S. product, that they're going to be here to buy it? It goes both ways.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what they're going to do. I think you would have to have just a complete meltdown for them to, if our beans were cheaper on the world market, for them not to find some sort of avenue to go in and buy our beans. That's what they're going to do. That's what they've always done in the past. And if they've got to create some sort of major problem or some sort of an issue to get our bean prices even lower so they can buy them, they'll do it. I mean, they've proved it time and time again. So my gut feeling here is that you're gonna continue to see more Chinese purchases of U.S. beans. I think that it could, whether you're talking corn, I think corn as well, but I think that you're going to be pleasantly surprised with these beans. And I guess ultimately, and I don't know how everyone else feels about this, I don't know how much, if any, that it has to do with phase one. It has to do with the fact they knew all along, I think, that they were going to need to buy some of this stuff. And they were probably, in my opinion, trying to improve their public perception out in the world for them by signing this phase one deal.
Interesting. Interesting. So the COVID-free certification that they're pushing for scares me. The reason that I say that is because at some point they might just say, oh, listen, we found the COVID virus on a shipment of beef, or we found a COVID virus on a shipment of pork or in beans or whatever, and up goes another artificial trade barrier. That's one of those things that we need to watch for, that your dad would say, yep, go, just wait a couple of days. They'll be here to buy more cheaper
absolutely.
Later.
Yeah, and I guess the only thing that makes you feel a little bit better about it is it's not specific to the U.S. You know, they're saying that for everyone, that they've got this whatever, you know, they're going to test this for COVID. I don't know how you get it on a shipment, whether it's someone that is on the ship or what. I mean, I didn't know COVID resided in corn or beans, but, you know, bottom line, I mean, I don't know. I think it's just another way for them to negotiate something that is going to be a better deal for them. And like you said, I think if they get in a situation where they see prices are going to potentially dip and they can get someone to work with them to weasel out of a contract or two, they're going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What's your bean balance sheet look like right now for the end of this year and into next year?
Okay. On our bean balance sheet, you know, I think if you look here at 83.82 million acres planted, all right, right now, I'm going to call this around a 51 crop, just shooting from the hip. If I look at that, I mean, I'm going to be in that 5.25 to 5.50 range. I know we've been talking a fairly tight bean balance sheet, but I don't think that there's a lot of question in my mind that we're looking at maybe a little bit better yield than what the USDA is suggesting. Now, that is suggesting that we're not going to see a huge ramp up in exports at this stage of the game. I got to think that I'm being conservative on my export estimate, but right now I think 550 is probably the most that I would come up with, unless you get a real shocker of a yield. And with today's bean genetics, especially as early as what we planted, I'm not going to rule that out necessarily just yet, but I think 51 to 51 and a half is probably as much as what I'd want to go right now.
Okay. So 620 at the end of this year, 425 at the end of next year. Over or under on the 425?
I think I'm over pretty safely. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm plugging in my yield, you know, because I think the USDA will come in with something above a 50. I've got to think when it's all said and done, even if we get bigger exports, you may end up having a little bit bigger number than what we all want to see, just simply due to the fact that I think this could be an awfully big bean crop. I don't want to say exactly where I think it is right now, but if we get good weather to finish, I think that it'll certainly be above 50.
Yeah, okay.
Well above.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Anything you like in the cattle market right now?
Oh, I don't know. The cattle market, to me, I think moving forward, you know, I'm a little bit friendly here. I think whenever I look, like, for instance, at December, I think we get up into that 112, 113 area, in my opinion, sooner or later. To me, you work through these heavier weights. You know, we saw weights come down there last week. I've got to think with placements today, maybe a little bit less than what the trade was expecting, you might see a little bit of life here next week, and I think you push up through some resistance, and I think this market could actually come alive. I kind of like cattle in here. I'm definitely more friendly cattle than what I am hogs. That's what I've been telling everyone. I can safely say that.
Yeah, that premium that the futures have got to the cash and the hogs right now is a bit it's a bit concerning to me, especially when you look at the back month hog contracts trading where they're at right now. Maybe we take a look at getting some protection in place. Any of the markets you think right now demand some risk management action, Matt?
Not necessarily. I think that the thing that concerns me with, like, for instance, selling corn, am I bullish if I think we're going to have a 180 plus yield? No. But if I'm also selling at 335, you know, versus an insurance price, you know, 53 cents above that, that's a pretty risky proposition. If something would happen, for instance, the dollar would plummet, the Chinese buy a bunch of corn, and we see some sort of an inflationary type situation, I've got to manage the relationship between the sale price that I have on my corn and what my insurance looks like, especially if I'm looking at a yield that is even marginally close to my APH, because when you're this far below the insurance price, if you have an aggressive insurance policy, you could get paid on a really salty corn yield. So I got to be really careful to not get myself too leveraged on one side of this thing, because the real risk for a lot of producers is actually if the market would go up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I hear you. I hear you. All right, man. I think we've covered a lot of bases today. There's one last thing. The shipment, and I'm only going to leave you about 30 seconds for this. We've got a heck of a shipping program lined up for the Gulf for this fall. Is it too big?
That's definitely a concern. You know, definitely a concern. And it's been really interesting to see your bids on some of your rivers. Oh, my gosh. We've had some really, really solid overs that people are posting. I think people need to take a very close look at those and be cautious as to, you know, look a gift horse in the mouth and turn away, because I think that there's some opportunity in here.
Gotcha. Hey, tell Tiff and the kids hi for me, and we'll talk to you later, buddy.
I will do so. Thanks for having me, bud.
All right, man. That is Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. When we come back, Davis is going to have the Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
All right, welcome back. Sit down and do the math on what Matt was talking about there at the end. For some producers, the risk is that the price goes up. I think most that conversation was had earlier this year as well. You know, and I think people are understanding exactly what we're talking about. And you never want to root against higher prices. At least I don't. That's not in my nature, dude.
Right.
You need to, if just understand all the risks that you're facing out there if the market does turn around and go back to the upside. Couple of tweets from at Farmer Bob NWMO, hashtag AgriTalk. Will they print that big of a number, referring to the 180 plus on corn yields, and then have to pay out crop insurance? Well, you would hope that the two wouldn't be tied together. You would hope that Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at National Ag Statistics Service, doesn't care what the crop insurance payout would be. So, yes, I would say that they would print that big of a number, even if it does mean that prices might go down and you would be looking at a bigger payout on crop insurance. Is there any, this one's from Matt Deering Tanner. Is there any word on more, any word on more Chinese ASF issues, African swine fever issues? Did they get it stopped? And is there, if they are emptying cold storage of hogs, that ASF has a shelf life in frozen food? Yes, it does have a shelf life. I didn't say the date, the number of days that you mentioned, Tanner, because I haven't seen that number that you've got there. I do know that it survives in frozen food. That's why you don't want to feed pork scraps to hogs, because you throw them one pork chop and you can infect the entire herd. So, yes, that does work. Now, as far as stopping the spread, another outbreak of ASF, as far as I know, they are still struggling with that. And the flooding on the Yangtze in South China is making things more difficult and trying to figure out exactly how they're going to get that under control. Tanner, I haven't talked about it a whole lot because I'm trying to get my hands around exactly what's going on with it. Been talking to a few people about it, just haven't been able to talk about it on the show. Okay, you ready, dude?
I'm ready.
Let's get to it. The Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report. Give me fire, give me that one that is
hot. Yeah. The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report is a service of Pro Farmers Inputs Monitor for weekly updated fuels and fertilizer prices from across the Midwest and in your crop district. Visit profarmer.com and now chip. The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. Farm fuels and fertilizers have not done much in the past week, or for the past 3 weeks, actually. Last week, we highlighted the wholesale markets in our report with StoneX's Josh Linville. Shameless plug here, Chip. If you didn't get a chance to check it out, I talked with that dude for a total of like 17 minutes. I was rolling tape on the whole shebang.
Yeah.
What you heard on air last week was just a tantalizing sample of a very insightful and, dare I say, well-crafted interview with a genuine industry expert. I've got the whole interview posted for your perusal at profarmer.com under the inputs tab. A metric ton, I would put it at. Well, it's an estimation.
Wow.
A metric ton of uncertainty in wholesale markets right now. And that kind of seems to have retailers holding their prices relatively unchanged for the time being. Some have already restocked, but those who haven't are probably just waiting to see where those wholesale markets go. Let's talk a little diesel. We went all in a few weeks ago, Chip. You might remember, at a regional average of $1.39 per gallon. That was during planting season. Okay, put a pin in that. I opined in my writing for ProFarmer.com this week that if Ruby Red can fall during planting, chances are it might could do it during harvest as well. I mean, it's 2020 after all, right? If diesel can fall during peak demand season, why not? And get this, EIA reports a 1.1 million barrel build in national distillate stocks in the most recent report week. That puts distillate stocks well above what they were when diesel previously bottomed at $1.39 during planting season. Can we get back there? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. We're steady on the week this week. A regional average of $1.52. We've been there for three consecutive weeks now. Might be some opportunities to hook into some spring diesel if the stock situation pressures the retail market again the way it did this spring. Propane, also three weeks now, consistently at the exact same price, $1.09 regionally. Stocks are still rising. I looked back at my data, Chip, and found that right before one last late summer gasp to the downside, propane almost every single year has been flat for 3 or 4 weeks. And then the following week, we start to see it come down at least a few cents. Summer bids probably floating around, but we might get a few pennies out of this market yet. But be ready to book your LP pretty soon. Fertilizer prices, totally boring this week. Not a lot of changes from state to state on any of our fertilizer prices, with one very notable exception, Kansas. Kansas declined at least moderately in all of the fertilizers we survey, except for anhydrous. I would leave anhydrous out of that, which held basically steady in Kansas. But get this, Kansas NH3 is like $403 in its statewide average, just about to hang a three handle.
unprecedented. I titled my fertilizer post this week, "Hello, Kansas." If you're out in Kansas and plan to apply fall or spring nutrient even, I might pick up the phone. Talk with your preferred retailer right away. See if you can find a deal or two. I'm not going to run down all these prices. Just everything was lower. Super boring. Our nutrient composite index off as well. Chip.
Hey, we've named a pavilion. Oh, first off, thank you, Davis. Appreciate that. We've named a pavilion at the Farm Journal Field Days.
Oh, very good.
We've got the Machinery Pete Pavilion.
The Machinery Pete Pavilion.
It's going to be available 24/7, 365.
Well, how does that work?
How do you not want to go to this? It's Greg just said in a press release that this tent ain't coming down after 3 days, boys. It's going to be up 24/7, 365. So, you hey, guys, I've got a homework assignment for you. Over the weekend, just go to farmjournalfielddays.com and take a look.
Free.
Find that registration button and get registered for the Farm Journal Field Days. While you're there, go ahead and get registered for the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour as well, because you're going to be able to sit in on the evening meetings starting August 17th. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, you guys. Hey, pay attention here. We've got U.S. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao on Monday morning. Wow, that's going to be a lot of fun. Come back to AgriTalk. Have a good weekend.